you're familiar with the ink blots?
Yeah.
What's the whole idea of the ink blot? The whole idea of the ink blot is they show somebody a random splotch, and how are people going to interpret that splotch? Based on them, based on their reality, based on their perception, and based on what they say about that blotch, the idea is the psychologist is supposed to be able to see what kind of issues they have, what kind of problems they are, what their hang-ups are, whatever it is. Okay, so what I think actually we're going to see here in this chapter is a sort of life is also at times a Rorschach test. Life is also, events happen to us and we have to decide how to interpret them, and based on our reality, everybody is going to interpret events differently. So let's begin first by reading the chapter. Now, whenever I could, I did give you the sources here in Hebrew and English. That's why the source sheet is so long, because you have every source twice. Now, we are beginning in the middle of Malachim Bet, Perek Vav. It actually starts in the middle of the chapter, the story. Why do chapters sometimes start in the middle of the chapter? Because it was a Christian division, correct. So we're going to begin, we're going to read through the end of Vav and the beginning of Zion. I'd rather read the whole thing and look at it globally rather than pasuk by pasuk. Vayhi acharechem, vayitbot ben hadad melech haram et kol machanehu, vayaal vayatsar al shomron, vayhi ra'av gadol b'shomron, v'hinei tsarim aleha ad hayot rosh chamor b'shmonim kesef, v'rova hakav divoyim b'chamesha kesef. Okay, so we're having a famine. The famine is set up by a siege, as opposed to one that's caused by drought or anything else. The siege has been put on by Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, on the capital city of Malchut Israel, Shomron, today Sebastia, correct? And the famine is so great that the head of a donkey costs 80 pieces of gold, and the excrement of the dove costs 5. Vayhi melech Yisrael over al hachoma, and the king of Israel is walking on the mountain. V'isha tza'aka alav lemar, hoshi'a Adoni hamelech. And a woman calls out to the king and says, save me, O king. Vayomer al yoshi'ech Hashem me'ayin oshi'ech hamin hagoren o min hayekev. Now, this is actually a problem to translate it, but let's work with the translation that we have here. And he says, if the Lord cannot save you, then how can I, from the threshing hold or from the wine press? In other words, I have nothing to give you. Vayomer la hamelech, malach. So the king says to her, what do you want? Vatomer isha hazot amra elai, tniet benech v'nochelnu hayom, that b'ni nochal machar. She said, I made a deal with this woman that we would eat my child today, and then tomorrow we're supposed to eat hers. V'nevashel et b'ni, and we cook my child. V'nochelehu v'omari leha b'yom ha'ach, and we ate my son. And then comes the next day, and I say to her, t'ni et b'nech v'nochelnu. And I say, comes the next day, like we agreed, and I say, give me your child, let's share it. V'tichbe et b'na. But she's hid it. Vayhi kishmo hamelech et divrei ha'isha, vayikra et begadav, v'hu over al hachoma, vayar ha'am, v'hine hasak al bisro miyabayit. The king hears the story. The only reaction he can have is he rips his clothing, and there beneath his clothing, he's wearing sackcloth. Good question. Let's leave that for now. And so, the nation sees that he's actually has wearing this sackcloth, which he obviously had put on at home. Vayomer ko yaseli Elohim v'cho yosif im ya'amod rosh Elisha ben Shafat alav hayom. And the king says, I've got to kill Elisha. His head can't stay on his shoulders. The Elisha, at the same time, Elisha yoshev beto, v'zakenim yoshvim ito, he's sitting and the zakenim are sitting around him, v'yishlach ish milfanav b'terem yavo ha-malach elav. Before any messengers have get to him, he sends out a man, v'omer al zakenim, hari item ki shalach ben hamiratzeh chazel hesirat roshi. Hey, check this out. The king, who he calls the son of the murderer, wants to cut off my head. Ru'u kivo ha-malach sigruot ha-delet. When the messengers come, close the door. V'lachatzim oto ha-delet halo kol raglei Adonav acharav. But know that when you close the door from the messenger, the king is going to be not far behind him. In other words, Elisha's giving a prophecy of what's going to happen. Odenu midaber imam, he's giving this prophecy. Ha-malach yored olav. And behold, the king's messenger comes. Va'yomar, and he says, now it's not clear who says this, Hinei zot hara'a me'et Hashem. This evil is coming from Hashem. Ma ochil Hashem od. What can I do? Vayomer Elisha. And Elisha says, Shimu dvar Hashem. Hear the words of God. Ko amar she'em. Ke'et machar sa'as solet bashek. This time tomorrow, a measurement of the flour will be for shekel, v'sa'atayim sha'orah b'shekel, and you'll get two measurements of barley in a shekel, b'sha'ar shomron. In other words, this time tomorrow, famine's over. Vayan ha'shlish asher le'melech nish'an al yado, and the king's right-hand man hears this prophecy, he hears what Elisha says, vayomer, hinei Hashem oseh arubot b'shamayim, hayyeh ha'davah hazeh? What, is God going to open up windows in heaven and pour down food? What kind of thing is this? Vayomer hincha ro'eh beinecha umisham lo tochal. And the Navi says, you're going to see it, but you are not going to eat from it. Ve'arva anashim hayu mitzorayim petach hashar. At the same time, there are four lepers who are sitting at the gates of the city. Vayomer ish el re'ehu, ma anachnu yoshvim po ad matenu. Why should we stay here and die of starvation? Ma manu navo ha'ir v'arav ba'ir v'matnu sham. If we go to the city, in the city we'll die of starvation. V'im yoshvanu po matnu, and if we stay here, we're gonna die. V'ata l'chu v'nifla el machane aram. Im yichyenu nichyeh, v'im yimitenu. We're going to die anyway. We're going to die if we stay here. We're going to die if we go in the city. Let's take a chance and go to the enemy camp. Maybe they'll give us food. If not, so we're dead anyway. In other words, we've got nothing to lose. Vayakumu baneshef lavo el machane Aram. And it's the afternoon time when the wind is blowing. They come to the camp of Aram. Vayavod katzei machane Aram. Vihine ein sham ish. Behold, they come to the camp and the camp is empty. It's deserted. Va'adnai hishmia et machane Aram kol rechev kol sus kol chayal gadol. God had made these noises to the camp of Aram, and it sounded like they were being attacked from horses and soldiers. Va'yomu ish alechev hinei schari leinu melech Yisrael et malchei hachitim vet malchei Mitzrayim lavo eleinu. It must be that the Jews got help from the other armies, and they're coming to attack us. Vayakumu, vayanusu b'neshef, vayazvu et aleihem, vetsusehem, vet chamoreim amachane, kasher hi vayanusu el nafsham. They literally got up and ran for their lives, leaving behind everything. They took nothing with them, and they just left. Vayavo hametzoreim ha'elu at ktzeh amachane, and these lepers come to the end of the camp. Vayavou el ohel echad, and they come into the first tent. Vayochlu vayishtu, and they eat and they drink. Vayisu misham kesef v'gzahav ubigadim, and they take some gold and silver and some clothing. Vayalchu vayitmanu, and they go and they hide it. Vayashuvu vayavou el ohel echer, and then they come back in and they go to a second tent. Vayisu misham, and they take things from there. Vayalchu vayitmanu, and they go and they hide it. But then one of the lepers says to the other one, Lo kein anachnu osim hayom hazeh. What we're doing is not really right, not so nice. Yom bisorahu, this is the day of news, good news. V'anachnu machishim, and we're being quiet. V'chikar boker, umatzanu avon, and if we wait till morning, then we're going to be guilty because people are going to die of starvation. V'atal l'chu v'navo v'nagida beit hamelech. So let's go quickly and tell the king. Vayavo, vayikru el shoar ha'ir, and they come to the city and they tell the gate man, vayigidu lahem lemor, banu amachne aram v'hine ein shem ish v'kol adam ki im asus asur b'chamor asur v'o'alim kasher hema. We've come to the enemy camp, it's empty, everything is tied up the way it is, but there's not a human being in sight. So he passes the word on up the chain of command till it gets to the king. He says, oh no, you can't trick me. This is a trick by the enemy. They know that we're starving, so they've all left the camp. We're all going to come out, and then when we're all out, vulnerable, outside of the city walls, they'll attack us, they'll attack the city, and this way they've accomplished what they haven't been able to accomplish with the siege. We're going to answer that question in a minute. Vayan echad me'avadav, vayomer, yikhu na chamisha menasusim hanisharim, asher nisharu bam, Hinam kechol hamon Yisrael asher nisharu ba, hine kechol hamon Yisrael asher tamu v'nishlacha v'nireh. His advisors say to him, you know what? Let's take five remaining men. We have nothing to lose anyway. They're going to die of starvation. So let's send out at least a search party, scouts, to see what's doing. Ve'kchu shnei rechav susim. They don't send five. They send two. Ve'yishlach ha'melech harei rachanei ram leim alechu v'ru. And he says, go out and check it out. Vayelchu achareihem ad Yarden, v'hinei kol haderech meleya b'gadim v'kelim asher yishlichu aram b'chipazon. And they start going after them, and vayeshuvo melechim v'yegidu lemelech. And as they run, as they're chasing it after, an army that's retreating, and they see thrown, kelim and b'gadim and knapsacks, whatever it is, thrown on the side, all the way, whatever it is that they were thrown so they could run faster. Vayetzu ha'am vayavozu et machaneh ha'am. And the word gets out to the nation, and they all come, and they come into the camp of Aram, and they take the spoils. Vayhi sa'a solit b'shekel v'satayim sharim b'shekel k'dvar Hashem. And exactly the fulfillment of Elisha, food is now in such abundance that for one shekel you can get a thing of solet and a double thing of barley. Vahamelech hifkid et ha'shalish asher nish'an al yado el ha'shar. And the king had appointed his right-hand man to stand at the gate and, organize what's going on. Vayirmisuhu ha'am b'sha'ar. And he is trampled to death. Vayamas kasher dibim asher diber beredes ha'melech elav. And this fulfills the prophecy of Elisha that he would see but would not be able to partake. And the prophecy of Elisha has been fulfilled. These psukim do not belong here. Okay, the parak ends over there. Okay, fine. Because it's quoting that this is what the shalish had said. Are they going to be arubot b'shamayim? And right, vayhilo kein vayimusu oto ba'am ha'am b'shar vayamat, and he gets what he deserves. Okay, now that you're able to look at this, as you're able to look at this chapter as a whole unit, let's begin talking about the famine. Let's talk about the famine. Now, when we talk about famines in biblical context, there are 10 famines. The Midrash, Yalkut Shimoni, says that there are 10 famines. This is one of the 10. The other ones are, I'll throw them out. Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Eliyahu, Megillat Rut is five. Then you have some more that are a bit more obscure. You have one by Adam and one by Lamech. And then, of course, the one that's going to be in Achrit Hayamim, Lo Ra'av Lalechem, V'lo Tam Lamayim Ki'im, L'dvar Hashem. But this is one of the famines that makes that list of 10 famines in the Bible. It is perhaps the one that we have the most information about, and it is a very painful story to read when you read about the famine here. Okay, what do we have that makes it so disturbing? What is so difficult about it? Okay, so first of all, obviously the story of the eating of the children, which we'll actually have to come back to, but that tells you how desperate the people have become. What else? Okay, the idea of killing Elisha as a result of it. They had to blame somebody. He acts as the scapegoat here. We'll talk about that in a minute. When it comes to the king. What? We're going to come to, I'm going to come to that. First, I just say, what, how do we see the, how difficult, it's true that once you talk about the eating of the children, I don't know if we need to mention anything else, but I think there are some other things that jump out at us.
The price,
that, the price of the food, okay, that also indicates to us.
The king wearing sackclothing.
The king, and why is the king wearing sackclothing? Okay, you also see the reaction of the lepers, which was, okay, we'll talk about that in a minute, but we're going to die. Right, we're going to die, okay? So we understand that that thing, even when also when the king, when they tell the king that he doesn't believe it, but he's still willing to send out scouts because
they're
going to die anyway, okay? So throughout the whole chapter here, we see that there's this theme running through the whole chapter that the famine is affecting everybody. And it seems to be that they're very, very close to the end of their rope, that there's very, very little food available. And that is all background for what comes next. Now, many of you asked about this king. First of all, he has no name. Based on the time period, based on the time period and the story that comes before, the story that comes afterwards, Chazal associate him with Yehoram, the son of Ahav.
Makes sense.
Which makes sense because Ahav is called the son of the murderer, and the time, right, and the time, the timing is correct. Now, when you read this chapter, what kind of impression do you get about this king?
He has empathy for his subjects.
Okay, he's empathy for his subjects.
But he also comes off.
He comes off cruel. I don't know if I would use the word. Oh, that's true. He comes off as being extremely ineffectual. Okay? This is the king, and he seems to have not only no power, but no plan. People are starving. So, come up with a bad plan, but something. Something. Yeah. Killing Elisha is like the extent of his, and which isn't going to help. That's the extent of his plan. And he
gave up.
He has completely given up. But what's interesting here is he has not completely given up. How do we know that? Why is he wearing the sackcloth under his clothing? Right. He doesn't want to demoralize the people completely. Okay. Why is he walking up on the walls, by the way? Okay, that this was an accepted, right, this was an accepted part of the king's responsibility, is he would come out, and he was coming out to see what was going on. We have a number of other kings who come out on the wall and speak to the various people. This is something we see in the Mikra. And so he comes out, he does not want to demoralize the people. He is wearing sackcloth as a result of this. What do you think of the king's reaction to the woman? Okay, so the obviously that he believes in God. Now, let's look at that verse again. Let's look at verse Chav Zion, verse 27. So, the woman comes out, and she, at this point, he doesn't know what she wants. She says, "Save me, O king." And his reaction is, "El Yoshi'ech Hashem, me'ayin Yoshi'ech, hamin hagoren o min hayekev." Now, you could really read this verse two ways. You could read it very cynically, meaning, yeah, you know,
I can't save you.
You know, this is all God's problem. You know, go turn to him. That's one way of reading that verse.
Or the opposite. Only God can save you. Why coming to me?
Right. The other way, or you could read it as almost not only that, but you can even read it almost as a prayer. You know, may God save you because
I can't.
So this you have the Mefarshim who read it both ways. Some read it as a very negative statement. Some read it as a more positive statement. How do you take? What do you think is his reaction when he hears the camp is empty? He thinks it's a trap. Now, is that being an intelligent king?
Yeah.
Except, what does he know? He had just right, but remember, 24 hours earlier, he had just heard a prophecy that. That things were going to be better, that the famine was going to end. But as soon as he hears that the camp is empty, he doesn't say to himself, "Ooh, look, it's happening." right? His immediate reaction is, it's a trick. Okay?
Well,
so that's
actually quite wary. It's not bad. He sends the scout.
He sends the scout. Okay. And now let's come back. So let's come back to the idea.
It wasn't his idea,
but he should have said to him, don't need to, because there's a prophecy. Why does he want to kill Elisha?
Because he could
die and change the situation. He is actually, as we said, he's looking for a scapegoat, and he decides that Elisha is responsible. Why would Elisha be responsible?
Because when we say it's going to be over, then he must have had some hint of power.
Okay, and if you remember our famine, right, if you remember the famine of Eliyahu was started by Eliyahu, the Kadosh Baruch Hu says we're going to end it, and sort of Elisha feels that this is the response, this is the job of the Navi. And if the Navi is not doing his job, then he deserves to die, and I'm going to kill him. What happens? What happens at the very end of Perek Vav? Right? Elisha says to the people sitting around him, the king wants to kill me, and he's sending his messenger. And then what happens? And while he was still speaking, that behold, the messenger was coming down to him, and he says, behold, this calamity is from the Lord. What more can I hope for from the Lord? And then immediately what happens at the beginning of Perek Zion? And Elisha says, hearken to the word of the Lord, for the Lord has said, at this time tomorrow, the famine is over. What happens? He gets another nevuah. Why? Okay. Well, let's talk about this for a minute. Let's look first of all at the source that you have on in source number four. In source number four, the source from Devarim.
Who did you say was the king?
The king is Yehoram, the son of Ahab. Oh, so we did 1 second. I'll come back to that in 1 second. I just want to show you something else. Va'amru kol ha'goyim el me'asa Hashem kacha la'aretz hazot. Ma'acheri ha'af ha'gadol hazeh. When tragedy comes, the people say, what instigated? Va'amru al asher azbu et brit Hashem Elohei avotam asher karat imam ba'otzio otam me'em et mitzrayim. When God sends punishment to the Jewish people, to the Jewish nation, it's coming as a result of sin. This is a well-known idea. Vayachu vayavdu alohim acharim v'ishtachavu lehem elohim asher lo yodumu v'lo chilak lehem v'yicharaf Hashem ba'aretz ahi la'vi elah et kol ha'klalah k'tuvah b'Torah. And that, why does God give the klalot that are written in the Torah? Because B'nai Yisrael aren't doing their part. And here, just to go back to source 2 and 3, Pesukim that you recognize, and resumment of those Pesukim, source 2, Vayikra Chavav Chavchet, V'halachti imachem v'chamat keri, V'yasaitem etchem afani, Sheva al-chatotchem, V'achaltem b'sar b'neichem, U'b'sar b'neotechem tochelu. This is the klala that Hashem said that was going to happen to B'nai Yisrael, and it actually does happen. Okay, and then of course we have it again in Devarim Perek Chavchet, Ve'achalti pri v'nech b'sar b'nech u'b'nosecha, Hashem natana l'cha Hashem elokecha b'matzor u'b'matzor k'asher yatzik l'cha o'ivecha. Exactly what happens, Hashem gives a prophecy that this punishment is going to come, the punishment is going to be so bad that you're going to eat your own children, and we see that happening in this chapter. So we see it happening at the beginning of the chapter. We know that this happens to B'nai Yisrael because they have sinned. But then what happens? They're saved.
But we don't see children.
We don't know why. That's correct. And that becomes a very, very important question here. What happened between yesterday and today? What happened that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to change their situation without that massive, you know, with Eliyahu, they have the Har Carmel, with Hashem Elokim. What happens here that allows Hashem to change their reality? So the only hint that we have is,
I think it's the action of the Mitzrayim, but it's after the Mitzrayim.
Right, so it can't be the action of the Mitzrayim.
Then, of course, Elisha makes the Nevuah that it will be better and then Hashem feels.
And even but what?
But
you think that
he doesn't want to
finish out overnight. Maybe the punishment
was the eating of the children.
And once they've punished,
yeah,
they can now get, okay, that can be, but look, let's look carefully at the end of, look at the end of Perek Vav to the beginning of Perek Zayin, because that's where the change happens. At the very end of Perek Vav, the king decides that he's going to kill Elisha. And then what happens? The last pasuk, V'hine ha-malach yored alav v'yomer, Hine zot hara'a me'it Hashem. Ma ochil Hashem od. He decides, the king decides that he's not going to kill Elisha. Why does he decide not to kill Elisha? Because he realizes that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It seems to be when the king brew this recognition, when the king comes to this realization that the Navi, and if the Navi is just the messenger of Hashem, so that everything in our world is just a messenger of God, God says, enough. And then the famine is going to end. Now, we'll come back to speaking about the end of the Ra'av and how it ends soon. Now, who says that, by the way? That was the question you asked. In the Pasuk 33, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, it says, Odenu min daber imam, v'hineha malach yoreda, vayomer. Who is the vayomer? There are two possibilities. It's not Elisha. Elisha, it's certainly not. The possibility is it's the king or the king's messenger. Okay, but either way, what it seems to be is that the king sent the messenger out to kill Elisha, and it seems that the king went running after him also, to prevent him from killing Elisha, which is also part of that tshuva process. One last thing. So, if we look at the king, he's an ineffectual king, goes through some sort of tshuva. And by the way, let me show you. Look at source number 5. It's a very nice source. Source number 5 is Shchora Ani V'Nava, pasuk you recognize from Shir Shirim. Amra Knesset Yisrael lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Afal pi shani shchora ani nava. Even when I'm black, I'm still beautiful. Bo ura'e. Let me give you an example. Ein lecha melech rasha yoter me Yehoram b'no shalachav. We're talking about a king who is a rasha. There's nothing you can do about it. He's a rasha ben rasha. Ubo u'makatov bo. And look what it says about him. Vayar ha'am v'nei ha'sak al b'saro me'habayit. Kevan shera'ab tzaratan shel Yisrael, miyad lo yachol lechvosh et atzmo. Even though he was such a big guy in the Ben Haratzeach, he saw that his people were suffering, and he puts the sackcloth on his body in order to participate in their sara as well. So, Ella, Rasha mibachutz ve'ah, that even so, there's that deep down inside good that comes out from there. So we see him, and maybe that sackcloth is the beginning of that tshuva process. Although, and this is what interesting, he doesn't accept the nevuah, right? Because he gets that message that the camp is empty, and instead of recognizing it as a redemption, he is skeptical, which shows that he does still have that, which makes me also, who's his right-hand man? The guy with the attitude, right? The guy with the attitude, the guy who's always going to open up heaven, you know? And then what happens to him? He dies. Who is responsible for his death? The king. Why? Because the king sent him out to do crowd control, right? To supervise. So I sort of wonder how much of the sidekick is really voicing Yehoram's skepticism. He keeps at least inside, whereas the sidekick verbalizes it, and the sidekick, although he's the one who gets killed, it is still a punishment for the king. He sent him there, this is his right-hand man, and I'm sure it did leave a certain emotion and tragedy in his life. Okay, so anyway, that is the king. Let's move on to our next set of characters, and they would be The lepers. Okay, the lepers. Okay, what are our lepers doing outside of the camp? Because they are lepers. This we know. Okay, by the way, this is the Haftorah for Parshat Mitzora. Just an interesting tidbit. We didn't read it this year, but they did read it in America.
Because
we had a different Shabbos, and we had it, it was Machar Chodesh, and they had it the next Shabbos, so they actually read this Haftorah, and we didn't. Interesting tidbit. Anyway, if you look at source number 6, it's a pasuk that you recognize from Vayikra, that the Mitzora will go outside of the Machane, and he will, Verosho Yeparua, Va'al Safam Yata, Tamei Tamei Yikare, he has to say that he's Tamei, so people say, Kol Yimei Asher Nega Bo Yitama, Tamei Hu, Vadad Yeshev Michutz L'Machane, Moshe Bo. Okay, so even already in the time, still by Elisha, the Mitzoraim are outside of the camp, but of course we know that...
Each Mitzora is supposed to be by themselves.
Right, but this seems to be, now this is an interesting thing, this seems to be a family of lepers, and we know that these lepers are putting their lives in danger when they go to the camp. If, by the way, you read those psukim, you'll notice what word comes up over and over then. Did you notice when we were reading it? The word there is, we're gonna die. We're gonna die anyway. They keep saying it, they say it a number of times over and over. And it's interesting, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah actually learns an interesting halakha from here. It learns that if you're very, you're not supposed to go to Gentile doctors. Because obviously, not now, then why not? Because you can't trust them. They might want to kill you rather than, the Gemara says, if you're so sick that you're going to die anyway, you can go to the Gentile doctor because it doesn't make a difference. That's right. And what is the source for the halakha? This story of the lepers. Because that's exactly what they said. They can die anyway, so it doesn't. And not only can they die anyway, which is a preferred death? Die by sword or die by famine, which brings us to, one second, the pasuk in Echa Perek Dalet, you don't have it, but the pasuk reads, Tovim hayu chalalei cherev me chalalei ra'av. Okay, at least the sword is instantaneous, and starvation is a long, prolonged, very painful death. Yes?
Doesn't this take place at the time when leprosy was a punishment for something?
Leprosy is a punishment. That is correct. Which brings us to an important point. These people that we're talking about are social outcasts. And they're social outcasts because of their leprosy, which came as a result of from a sin. Now, we skipped two other characters, and I want to compare them. That's why I want to go back to them now. We skipped these two women. We skipped the story of the two women. We sort of glossed over it, and I think we need to go back there. The woman says, we made a deal. That's it. She goes to the king. She says, king, save me. The king automatically assumes that what does she want? Food. But that's not what she wants. She wants justice. And that was a lot of the king's job, right? Remember when Natan HaNavi comes to David, he presents a court case. This was the job of the king to set the justice. And what's her story? We killed my child, and we were supposed to kill hers, and she did. That's right. Now, what is this supposed to remind you of? This is supposed to remind you clearly of the court case of Shlomo HaMelech. Correct. What was the situation there? One second. What kind of women? Zonot. Okay, they're called Zonot there, indicating also fringe of society, not mainstream society. And what are they fighting over by Shlomo? What kind of child? A live child. There they're fighting over a live child. Here we have two men, and they're not called Zonot. These are two women apparently part of mainstream life, and what are they fighting over? A dead child. Now it's not clear, by the way, if you read this verse clearly, it's not clear that these children on their own, and they're just, it's cannibalism, or is it actually murder, and then cannibalism. Okay, if you read the psukim carefully, it's not clear to us. I want to point that out. It's not clear to us what happened there. Question? Comment? Right, now, so what's the purpose of comparing it to the court case of Shlomo to this? Okay, because Shlomo had an answer. But I think that also what the Navi wants to do is show you
how bad times are,
how the degradation of society has reached that point where family, I mean, what else do we expect but to stand for, what else do we expect than a mother to protect her child and do whatever it is that she can to keep the child alive, and here what have we gotten? And that's what we had, even by the fringe of society in the time of Shlomo, and here what do we have? Right.
But it also shows that this king is effective as compared to Shlomo, who was decisive.
Right. Again, it actually makes that contrast very strongly. So the mothers who we expect to be the ones to maintain society, they in this chapter are the ones who are failing. And who is the one who's taking the moral high road here? Our lepers. Okay? And that's a comparison that you're supposed to make. Let me just mention one more thing before I go any further. I didn't mention to you. Let me just talk about momentarily the things that they were eating. In the beginning of the parak, it tells us that they're eating two things. A donkey's head. Now, what do you think of when you hear donkey's head? First of all, it's not kosher. And secondly, there's no meat. So first of all, if you're talking about something that's gross, it's not kosher. How much meat is on it? But yet the price is so exorbitant that only the extremely wealthy. And what's the second thing the pasuk talks about? The excrement of the dove. What were they doing with that? So there are two ideas in the commentators what they were doing with it. One is that they were using it for heat and for cooking and for heating. The other one is even worse, is that they would go through it looking for undigested kernels. Yes. That's what they're doing to look at whatever it was that maybe they'd find two or three seeds and they'd be able to feed themselves. I don't think so. I think we're talking about a famine of such magnitude that they're doing whatever it is. Right, so whether it's actual, whether it's metaphorical, I don't think it matters. The fact that they're eating their children, right? Which brings me...
They went through the garbage,
right. We all read stories like that of what they ate and what you had to eat.
The donkey's head. What happened to the rest of the body?
That was eaten a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't know what happened to that. I don't know who got that.
They cook their children.
That's right. It happens again. By the destruction, the eating of the children happens again. But this idea of making this bargain, I'll kill my son, and what makes her angry
is
she didn't keep her, but she doesn't come to him and say, what a terrible situation is that we have to eat our children, please. Mm-hmm. No, mm-hmm. Tachlis, what it is, and I think there is that comparison to these lepers. Now, who are these lepers? It is a well-known midrash that these lepers are actually Gehazi and his sons. Now, the midrash does this many times, where it takes anonymous people and it connects them to an event, it gives them a name and it gives them a personality. We discussed it when we discussed the Mialdot. If you remember, how do they know that Shifra and Pua are really Yocheved and Miriam? So why do Chazal associate Gehazi with this event? The time period is correct. Not only is the time period correct, but the chapter that comes right before chapter Vav and chapter Hey is our story where Naaman had come to Elisha to be cured of his tzara'at. And he wants to pay Elisha, and Elisha says, no payment. And Gehazi runs after him, and Gehazi says, he changed his mind, give me the money. And there, what does Gehazi get from Elisha, from Noam? He gets kichrayim kesef ushne chalifot bigadim. The same things that he takes now in the tent. What do the lepers do? They get to the tent. What's the first thing they do? is they. Can we blame them for that?
No.
We can't blame them. But what's the next thing they do?
They start
hoarding the gold and they start hiding it. They do that in one tent. Then they go to the next tent and they hoard it. And only after the second tent do they say to themselves, we should really, right, not so nice. Okay? So first of all, this seems to fit with the personality of Gehazi, as we have seen him in our previous chapter, gathering things that don't belong to him. And at the end of the last chapter, Elisha has cursed him with the Tzara'at of Naaman. So here we meet a Metzora who's doing the same thing. So it's not so unreasonable that Gehazi has, this is Gehazi and his sons. Now, if we talk about the king making some sort of transition here too are lepers are also changing their outlook. Okay? What motivates them to change their outlook? What inspires them to change their outlook?
Compassion,
right. That deep down, somewhere they too say, this is not right. We have to share our... and I think I said we're supposed to compare them to the women. Now, if you look at source number 7, in source number 7, you have a poem by Rachel HaMishoreret. For many years, I thought that was her last name, but my daughter said, no, she really does have Blaustein. She does have a last name. And she writes a fascinating poem. Let's read it first in Hebrew and then in English, and let's see what her message is. Now, notice the first thing she does is she quotes our pasuk from our chapter. V'shekvar hayamim ha'oyev hanora et shomron hevi b'matzor arba'a mitzora'im. The first thing it starts is it gives our pasuk, okay? First it brings up pasuk, v'arba anashim hayu mitzorim petach hashar v'yom u'ishore'eu hayom hazeh yom b'sorahu. That's the expression they use that we have to share this news. B'shekvar hayamim ha'oyev hanora et shomron hevim b'matzor arba'a mitzora'im la b'sru b'sora. La bisru bisorat hadror. Kishomron b'matzor kol ha'aretz kula, v'chaved hara'av minaso, ach ani lo oveh bisurat ki'ula, imipi mitzora hi tavo. Hatahor yivaser v'ga'al hatahor, v'im yad timatze lig'ol, az nivchar li linpol mimitzukat ha'matzor, or liyom. For a long while, the dreadful enemy brought Samaria to siege. Four lepers to her brought tidings. To her brought the tidings of freedom. A Samaria under siege, the entire land. The famine is too hard to bear, but I will not want news of freedom if it comes from the mouth of a leper. The pure will bring news, and the pure will redeem. And if his hand won't be there to redeem, then I will choose to die from the suffering of the siege on the eve of the day of the great tidings. Anybody want to make sense of this? Pardon? She's getting there. Yes, it is a political. It is a political poem. Correct.
Is it?
She is not starving.
That's right. She would know that. She doesn't know what it feels like. Yeah.
She is not starving. But what it. But first of all, she's helping us. Well, let's leave the politics for a minute. She's helping us to understand here something unusual about our chapter. One of the questions we asked is, why? Why does God save the people? But what's interesting is that our salvation is coming through the lepers. Our salvation is coming not with lightning and thunder and, you know, this fantastic, miraculous saving. Our saving is coming in a flawed sort of reality. God is using the lepers to show that... That's right. God decides, and this happens by Eliyahu as well, that he has to save the people. But the people obviously don't deserve a miraculous type of saving. So God uses the lepers
roundabout way.
A roundabout way, the flawed geula represents the flawed reality. And if you take a look at it, you'll see for a minute that there are a number of other things in our chapter that indicate this to us as well.
But maybe if they would have believed the Lisha, it could have come from the pure source.
It could have, correct. And maybe if the king, had there been a real tshuva, and had there been a mass, things might have been different. But yet at the same time, so why does God save them? Right. There comes a point where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Maspik, I have to save them. But the saving that Hashem does is always mirroring where the people are at. Yeah. So that the saving of the lepers, reality. What else? Notice also, because something else. Who is involved in this saving other than the lepers? Not really. Nobody. Nobody. That's right. It's not that, it's nothing that the people do. It's not like they go out to war. It's not like the king has a plan that God makes come true. The people who are extremely passive. The people are extremely passive. And one second. Not only are the people passive, when the redemption is happening, what's happening at the same time? There's a guy getting trampled.
They're stampeding.
They're not standing in line, right? It's not a nice brokenness. Somebody is dying. Okay? So that you see, I think that what you see here in the chapter is you see this parallel between the type of saving that is happening compared to the reality that the people are in. So the saving happens. It doesn't happen in a glorious way. It doesn't happen through the initiation of the people. There's a tragedy that happens here as well. So that there are many times where...
But actually, it's very miraculous because they said all those noises and everything, it was from Hashem.
It is extremely miraculous.
But they don't know.
But that's also, I think that's an important point. They don't know why they ran. But also, where's the Shira? Where's the Hoda'ah? Where's the singing of praise to God that the enemy camp is empty? Okay, but even then, so that he justified. But then, you know, where's that wiction of the miraculous type of saving here? It's completely missing.
Obviously, sometimes it's true about the part of the eternity also. If the mistake that he made before, he's still almost making it again, and then he's got it back.
That's correct. Just the way the king went through a certain transformation, so too Gehazi also goes through that transformation, does not repeat the same sins that he does. So then, of course, Okay. So now that what Rachel is referring to and you have it, I found it a much clearer source. You have it in source 9. Source number 9, on the last page, you have a selection by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik called Israel's Independence Day Reflection in Halacha and Hashkafa. We thus see that the miracle of the deliverance of all the inhabitants of Samaria was carried out through the medium of 4 lepers. Physical lepers, yes, but above all, spiritual lepers. According to our sages, those 4 outcasts, none other than Gehazi and his 3 sons, who were afflicted with the leprosy as a penalty for their spiritual heresy. The Rambam, in his commentary to the Mishnah in the last chapter of Sanhedrin, describes them as cynics and scoffers. The first argument as to how any relief for the Jewish people could be realized through the medium of apikorsim, non-believers, can easily be rebutted by the precedence of the deliverance accorded to the people of Samaria through the medium of the 4 lepers. This episode shows that no Jew can be excluded from the grace of God, and everybody can be a messenger of God, and that Israel, afal pi shechata Yisraelhu, a Jew, even though he has sinned, remains a Jew, and that there is no innate tendency towards altruism, and there is And as you said, there is an innate tendency towards altruism even in the heart of spiritual lepers. Hala. It also shows that God does not exclude any Jew from salvation, and he may therefore designate even spiritual outcasts as the messengers of relief and deliverance for the people of Israel. Consequently, we cannot ignore the significance of the establishment of the state of Israel simply because Jews who stand a substantial difference from any form of observance of mitzvot were at the forefront of founding the state. Perhaps the fact that non-observant Jews are in the forefront today is a penalty for the Orthodox Jewry's failure to play the important role, important part in the formation of the state. Okay? So that, right, that's right. How many people would really say, I'd rather die than, you all read that and you said, well, obviously, well, you all said, well, obviously she hasn't been dying. But when you take it to modern times, say, how many people are rejecting different forms of salvation, be it personal, be it national, because they don't like the way it's coming, they don't like the messenger, they don't like the way it's happening, they don't approve of it. So that if this goes back to what we began about with the Rorschach test, with how we look at our reality, I think that what happens here in our chapter is we have a number of changes of reality. We have the king who somehow manages to change his perspective. We have the lepers who manage to change theirs. We have the right-hand man of the king who does not manage to change his, and he ends up dead. And I think the question that leaves us as the readers of this chapter is how do, especially during this week of between Yitzayim Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, how do we change our reality in order to see that which is God's part of his plan, and how do we learn to interpret it in the way it's meant to be interpreted?